Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back to As It Is, another chance to improve your American English. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we have two stories that will tell you about our world. You will notice that we talk at a slower speed and use words that are easy to understand. That's what Special English and Learning English are all about. Many scientists have been warning for some time that climate change can cause sea levels to rise. Most of the time, we think about that as something far into the future. But today, we will go to Liberia and hear how rising waters are already causing damage. Then we'll talk about how safe it is to fly these days. With plane crashes and terrorist attacks in the news, you may wonder if it is safe to use this very fast method of transportation. We'll let you hear what some experts think. As It is coming to you from VOA. Let's get started. On to part one. Rising sea levels are washing away the homes and businesses of thousands of poor people on the coast of Liberia. The country's Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, has started a program to help stop this erosion or loss of land. But the process is expensive. Joe Muffer lives in Grand Bassa County's Buchanan City in Liberia. The rising Atlantic Ocean is washing away land in the city and other areas. He says the situation is terrible.
I have to relocate my family to an abandoned school building because, as you can see, the sea erosion is still tough. The sea is rising every day, every moment, but we are in dire need of help right now.
Liberia's Environmental Protection Agency knows about the problems caused by rising sea levels, and the agency has been fighting the erosion. Stephen Y. Nuffel is Deputy Executive Director of the Liberian EPA. He says huge rocks are being used to try to control the situation. Mr. Nuffel says the Ministry of Lands, Mines, and Energy has spent $6 million to reduce the efforts of climate change in Liberia. He says $2.4 million is being spent for the first phase of the project. The goal is to build walls in the water to stop the ocean from washing away land along the coast. But that spending is not enough. Liberia's Committee on Sea Erosion estimates that at least $18 million will be needed to complete the project. People have been building barriers with bags of sand in front of their homes to keep out the rising water. But this has not been enough to help many people. Earlier this year, the sea destroyed Tom Okai's home. Mr. Okai says more needs to be done to help the victims and the people who remain at risk. He says many people are losing hope.
And we don't have anywhere to go, and then we don't know what to do. We don't know where to start from.
Officials say they have tried to get people who live in the most threatened areas to move. But the officials say most people refuse to leave because the government cannot help pay for them to move. Mr. Neufel says people who have been forcibly removed often return to rebuild their homes. He says that often people settle illegally in nearby areas that are also threatened. Mr. Neufel advises people to be careful where they put buildings. He says, we stop people from building in waterways, encroaching on the drainages, but nobody pays attention. He says the EPA is discussing new plans for fighting sea erosion. And he says the agency is searching for more money to continue its battle. Thank you. U.S. flight officials recently banned U.S. airline companies from flying to Israel's Ben-Gurion International Airport in Tel Aviv. The ban lasted for 24 hours following a rocket strike near the airport. The temporary ban took place after a Malaysian airplane was shot down over eastern Ukraine, killing 298 people. But experts say that air travel worldwide remains by far the safest way to travel. Christopher Cruz is here with more on the story.
America's Federal Aviation Administration banned aircraft from flying to and from Israel's Ben-Gurion Airport. The ban came in the form of what is called a notice to airmen. The FAA acted after a rocket struck about 2 kilometers from the airport area. The European Aviation Safety Agency, Tuesday, called for similar action. Its Safety Information Bulletin strongly suggested that airspace users stop operating to and from the airport in Tel Aviv. Delta Airlines Flight 468 was on its way from New York to Tel Aviv with 290 passengers and crew when the FAA declared the ban. The plane was sent to Paris instead of Tel Aviv. But Israeli officials say there is no security problem. Transport Minister Yisrael Katz said there was no reason to cancel flights and no reason to surrender to terrorism. Marie Harf is a spokesperson for the U.S. State Department. In Washington earlier this week, she said the FAA safety notice is meant to guarantee public safety. Ms. Harf says it is not a political statement directed at Israel about its operation against Hamas militants in Gaza.
I would note that in 2012, the department also issued travel warnings for Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza in March, August, and December. So this is a step we have taken when we felt the situation on the ground warranted it. Obviously, that is a process that we go through that in no way is policy-related or politically related. It is just related to how we can best protect American citizens.
Concern about airline safety also follows last week's shooting down of Malaysian flight MH17 over eastern Ukraine. U.S. intelligence suggests poorly trained pro-Russian separatists are responsible. They are suspected of having used a Russian-made surface-to-air missile. Airline Captain John Cox is also chief executive officer of the Washington-based company Safety Operating Systems. He says it is very safe to fly commercial aircraft.
In spite of the tragic loss of Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 and the Malaysian Flight 370, it has never been safer to fly. We flew 3.3 billion passengers last year that had the lowest fatality rate in recorded history. These tragedies do not change the fact of the safety of our aviation system.
Mr. Cox expressed deep concern about non-military groups having weapons like the SA-11 air defense system. Mr. Cox said there are not great numbers of such missile systems in existence. He added that there will be a joint effort to restrict flying over airspace in areas where open conflict happens. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. If you are listening via the Internet, it's time to use your printer and save the stories you've just heard, and then download the audio as a podcast. That way you can go back and practice reading and speaking American English whenever you want. And if you are listening on the radio, please write to us and tell us where you are and what stations are the loudest. We are here 7 days a week with As It Is. Learning English is a part of the Voice of America.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. As the world population grows, there is a need for more food, including seafood. The World Bank predicts that by 2030, 70% of the demand for fish will come from Asian countries. The World Resources Institute recently studied world fish production. The group says fish production needs to more than double by the middle of the century to meet that demand. It says the world's oceans, lakes, and rivers are fished to their limit. And it says more fish must be produced in aquaculture projects or fish farms. One such farm is operating in the California community of Imperial. Imperial is 26 kilometers north of the border with Mexico. Craig Elliott is part owner of Imperial Catfish.
We're probably the largest catfish farm this side of the Mississippi, probably the largest catfish farm in California.
Mr. Elliott says that his business ships thousands of kilograms of fish every week to Asian grocery stores. Many people who go to those stores want to buy live fish.
In fact, we can't really produce enough fish for the demand.
As the demand for seafood increases, so does the number of fish farms. Mike Vellings launched AquaSpark, a company that invests money in agriculture business.
It's a relatively young industry, but it grows about 9% a year, and we expect that to keep a growth rate going in the next couple of decades.
Mr. Velling says China produces more fish on farms than any other country. He says there are very few fish farms in the United States.
The U.S. relies heavily on wild-caught and on imports, and only 1% of the world's farming today is done in the U.S.
Craig Elliott says it is not easy to operate a profitable aquaculture business.
You put a fish in at this big and it's going to be, 18 months to 2 years before they're 2 to 3 pounds. And so you have all that big outlay and you have no return for a long, long time. And, some people make it, most of them don't.
There are also environmental concerns. Nathan Weaver is an environmental activist. He says uneaten fish meal and waste products from farmed fish can be harmful to other creatures.
Many of the species of fish we like to eat are large predatory fish. They're things like tuna or salmon that are already two or three levels up the food chain. So in order to farm these large carnivores, you have to actually feed them smaller fish. And the concern is that in order to keep a tuna farm going or a salmon farm going, you would end up having to basically catch all of the little fish in the ocean.
But the World Resources Institute says government policies, technology, and private efforts have led to improvements in fish farms. It says one U.S. food store chain only sells fish from farms that do not use pesticide products, antibiotic drugs, or added growth hormones. And that's the Agriculture Report. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Today on the program, we tell about hundreds of newly identified plants and animals in Southeast Asia. We also report on the killing of a famous elephant in Kenya. And a new study that finds elephants can hear differences in human language. Finally, we report on efforts to protect North American polar bears.
The World Wildlife Fund for Nature says researchers found nearly 400 new kinds of plants and animals in the Greater Mekong River area in 2012 and 2013. The WWF says researchers identified more than 2,000 other plants and animal species there during the past 17 years. Some of the creatures were discovered in surprising places. Experts say a warbler was among the newly identified birds found in the Greater Mekong. The warbler seemingly hid for years in and around the Cambodian capital, Phnom Penh.
Thomas Gray heads the WWF Greater Mekong Species Program. He says the Cambodian tailor bird was the only bird added to the new species list in 2012 and 2013. He believes people study birds more than any other creature on the planet. And he says that makes it even more unusual to have found a new one.
Researchers are crediting Jody Rowley with finding a large, bright, green flying frog. She says the discovery came as a surprise. Ms. Rowley is with the Australian Museum Research Institute. At first, she did not recognize that she had identified a new species. She thought the flying frog was similar to a frog that was already known to scientists. But when she saw the similar creature a year later, she understood that the Vietnamese frog was something new. Her frogs, the two she saw, were 10 centimeters long. Ms. Rowley says they have been found in only two places. Both areas are surrounded by rice crops and other agriculture.
The Greater Mekong lies in one of the world's five most threatened areas for plant and animal species. Thomas Gray says development is just one danger facing the creatures. He says one of the newly identified animals, a giant flying squirrel from Laos, was found at a meat market. He said that demonstrates another major threat to the species from trade in wild meat, bush meat, and other wildlife products. The WWF's report also includes new species with unusual physical qualities or characteristics. For example, the first eyeless huntsman spider was found in Cambodia. From Vietnam, scientists identified a walking snakehead fish. It can survive for days on land.
The African Wildlife Federation recently confirmed the death of a famous elephant in Kenya. Thousands of people watched Satao over the years on visits to Tsavo East National Park. The nonprofit Tsavo Trust said the huge animal was killed with a poisoned arrow.
The trust and the Kenya Wildlife Service had been following the elephant's movements for 18 months before his death. Wildlife workers say his very large ivory tusks made him easy to identify, even from the air. The Wildlife Service also watched him and other elephants from the ground. The tusks also made Satao a target. They almost touched the ground, measuring more than 2 meters in length.
Wildlife groups intensified their efforts after 1,000 elephants moved to the border around the park, a favorite area for poachers. After rains, elephants often enjoy the area's green vegetation. Satao was last seen alive near that border, just 300 meters from where his body was found. The area where he lived measures many kilometers from end to end, which makes guarding against attack hard. Thick greenery adds to the difficulty.
The death of Satao reminds us all of the falling numbers of African elephants. For example, Tanzania lost 80% of an important population of elephants, and the number of the country's forest elephants dropped by 65% during the past 10 years.
Hundreds of elephants live near humans, and it appears at least some of them have learned whether it is a man, woman, or boy who is speaking, and whether the speaker is a threat.
Researchers studied elephants at Amboseli National Park in Kenya. They recorded the voices of men from the Maasai and Kamba tribes. The Maasai sometimes kill elephants because of conflict over land where they can feed their cattle. The Kamba men threaten elephants less.
Members of the different tribes recorded the same words. "Look, over there, a group of elephants is coming," in two languages. Female Maasai speakers and young Maasai boys made other recordings. They were played for hundreds of elephants in 47 family groups, with surprising results.
When the elephants heard the adult male Maasai voices, they often gathered together or moved carefully away. Researchers called this defensive bunching and investigative smelling. But when the elephants heard Maasai females, boys, or adult male Kamba speaking, they did not demonstrate concern. The researchers say this showed the elephants were able to, in their words, correctly identify the most threatening individuals on the basis of their ethnicity, gender, and age. The study was published earlier this year in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
Human beings and rising temperatures have been threatening polar bears for many years. To fight that threat, scientists are working hard to save as many of the animals as possible.
A leader in that effort is the Alaska Zoo in Anchorage, Alaska. Since the 1970s, the Alaska Zoo has taken responsibility for polar bears left alone in the wild. A female bear named Apun was rescued as a cub by a hunter. The hunter had shot her mother after the mother attacked him. The Alaska Zoo is also home to a male polar bear named Lutik. He was born in Russia's St. Petersburg Zoo. Scientists have placed the two animals together. They hope they would produce a cub and increase the population of the threatened species.
Patrick Lampe is the executive director of the Alaska Zoo.
For years, we've been the holding facility, sometimes permanent and sometimes temporary, for orphan cubs coming in, whether their parents were killed or they got separated in a storm.
He says the first 3 years polar bear cubs spend with their mothers are extremely important for survival. Cubs without parents can never return to the wild because they have not learned survival skills. Susie Miller is a biologist with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. She says the Alaska Zoo is the cubs' first stop.
In the last 5 years especially, but actually for even longer now, 20 plus years, they've been helping us deal with orphan cubs.
About 20,000 polar bears live in the wild around the world. Of those, about 1,500 live on Alaska's northern coast. An unknown number are found around the Bering and Chukchi Seas. Bears spend more time on land as warming temperatures reduce Arctic sea ice. They look for whale and fish bones outside Alaskan villages. Experts warn that the resulting increased contact with humans may lead to more conflict, and so may an increased number of people who come to see the animals. And when adult bears are killed, more cubs lose their parents. The Alaska Zoo is working to raise $8 million for a two-part project. The goals are to increase the polar bear exhibit and build a polar bear transition center. The center would receive and care for more bears.
This Science in the News was written in Special English by Geralyn Watson, from reports by VOA reporters Steve Herman in Bangkok and Joe DiCapua and George Pudich in Washington. It was produced by Christopher Cruz and edited by George Groh. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us next week at this time for more news about science on The Voice of America.